I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's Halloween. Did you buy candy to give to the trick-or-treaters tonight? Did you carve the pumpkin and decorate your bushes with scary ghosts and ghouls? Did you buy your dog a costume? Are you going to an adult Halloween party tonight? Halloween has become big business, and Americans are going to spend more than $7 billion by the time the day is done. Kathy Grannis is a spokesperson for the National Retail Federation, and we asked her to join us to tell us where all this money is going and what Halloween means for the holiday shopping season. And Kathy Grannis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So has Halloween become a bigger deal for retailers?
It really has. I can say that this year we noticed that average spend on Halloween has increased 60% since 2005. So that means that more people are spending more money on traditional Halloween merchandise. So that's everything from costumes and candy to, you know, even all the stuff that you need to have a special party.
So how much, when you boil that down, how much per person is being spent on Halloween?
This year, we expect people celebrating Halloween to spend about $77 on average, and that's up just slightly from last year, which was about $75. But I think the important part here that we noticed this year was more people are investing in costumes than ever before. So a large chunk of that $75 is going to go towards adult, children, and even pet costumes.
Well, in fact, in looking at some of the numbers, something like $1.1 billion spent on costumes for children, $1.4 billion spent on costumes for adults, 54 million adults apparently going to attend a party tonight, and $350 million on costumes for pets.
That's right. It's certainly a lot of fun numbers there, but there's really no question that this holiday has become more of an adult holiday than ever before, at least since, you know, we started tracking it, which was about 12 years ago.
And why do you think that is?
We talk to retailers and we talk to shoppers, and a lot of the feedback that we're getting really is that there are just simply more options available for adults these days. And, you know, we don't know if it was the chicken or the egg in terms of who drove that conversation, but somehow, you know, adult costumes really started becoming a thing, where back in the day you simply had to make do with, you know, old sheets from around the house to be a ghost, or, you know, those coffee grounds that I know people used for beards. But now you can buy all of those specialty costumes online or in a store as an adult, and and to show off your festive new costume, you're going to host a new party or you're going to attend a party. You know, and I think haunted houses have even gotten in on the action. There's haunted house campuses where you can pretty much do 10 different activities on one farm. And a lot of that has really driven the popularity of Halloween.
Well, and I think it's fascinating and not surprising, knowing how people feel about their cats and dogs, $350 million on costumes, and superheroes seem to be, you know, really big with the animal set.
That's right. Superheroes, pumpkins, I think, have been at the top for quite some time. Devils are also at the top for pets, and bumblebees. But then, you know, there are those very creative consumers that we know who go all out and put their pets in, you know, either homemade costumes or even something that would mimic what they're dressing as. So, you know, if they're going as a character from Despicable Me or Breaking Bad, they might actually even, you know, add something special to their pet to tag along with them that night.
Have you looked in, or is there any way to calculate what people who actually still make costumes, what they spend? Because they might need a sheet, they might need some needle and thread and some plastic tubing.
That's a great question. We unfortunately do not break it down that far. We do ask in terms of how their spending is going to change this year. We ask about, making a costume would be something they consider. And this year, I think about 20% said that, yes, you know, they would try and figure out how to make a costume to save a few bucks.
I was also reading from some of your research, something like $2.5 billion spent on candy. I certainly spent a portion of that on candy for tonight.
Right. Candy is actually the largest chunk of a consumer's budget. And, you know, rightfully so, the holiday actually, you know, started with notions of spending on candy. I mean, I know that the holiday speaks to more than just trick-or-treating, but at least for kids, the idea of trick-or-treating on Halloween has been around for a very long time. And, you know, so that's why you'll see retailers actually starting to put that candy out as early as late September to make sure, you know, families get their hands on the candy that they want.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, Kathy. That's Kathy Grannis. She's a spokesperson for the National Retail Federation, and we're talking about the fact that people are spending a lot of money on Halloween. It's a growing trend. And to join our conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times and tell us about the costume that you'll be wearing. Kathy is the first of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. I was surprised to learn and actually to see that there are Halloween cards and that that's also part of big business.
That's right. About 36% of Americans will buy a Halloween greeting card this year. And I think much of that goes to the fact that, you know, as a beloved holiday, there are that, you know, that does traditionally celebrate children, you know, across the miles. If you can't be with your niece or your cousin or your godchild or you know, or a son or daughter, you are at least thinking of them on this, you know, on this day that is very likely that they're going to be out and celebrating in some kind of fun way.
You mentioned the fact that these Halloween things begin appearing in stores in late September. I mean, it does seem for all these holidays, it seems a month or two before they actually happen, we're seeing all the goodies associated with them.
That's definitely something we've noticed too in terms of what retailers are doing and when they're offering their merchandise. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, retailers can't afford to lose out to their competitor these days, especially in this, you know, this kind of economy. So what we've heard is that by providing this merchandise early to the shoppers who are, you know, in fact, interested in this merchandise, they're actually, you know, able to maybe one-up their competitor or provide a really great shopping experience for their customers. You know, during the holidays, we know that 40% say that they begin holiday shopping before Halloween. So, wow. You know, it's a smart decision for companies to put that Christmas merchandise out in September. And same for Halloween. You know, we know that a third of Halloween shoppers begin their Halloween shopping well before October. So that's why you will see that merchandise out there as early as you do.
And how much do farms and farmers depend on Halloween? I'm thinking of pumpkin sales, but also farms that have transformed themselves into these entertainment experiences.
Absolutely. Over the last few years alone, you can't really turn the corner without hearing about some kind of haunted corn maze or a haunted hayride through a haunted forest. And, you know, and even hauntings aside, the traditional experience of fall and going to pick apples and pumpkins are all a really big part of that Halloween experience. And I think more so now than, you know, even 10 years ago. When you start going to the farms in early October, you're already thinking about Halloween. So farmers and you know, families with farms are taking this opportunity to really take advantage of, you know, what Halloween has become and insert themselves into this enormous holiday.
Let me get Julie from Downingtown to join our conversation. Hi, Julie. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just wanted to say hello. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I have two boys, 7 and 8, and the past 2 years I have made their costumes, and I've spent way more money making them.
Are we talking elaborate costumes here, Julie?
Yes. My one son wanted to be an ice cream truck.
Oh, my goodness.
It was his idea. You know, so we spray painted. It took 3 cans of spray paint, and it was a lot of fun, and he loved it. And then this year my other son wanted to be Steve from Minecraft. And you know, I just wanted to make sure that everything was great. So we printed it out on the computer and made the box. And then the other guy wanted to be a shark. You know, so I bought the red duct tape.
Oh,
and
my
the
gosh,
gray hoodie,
Julie.
And the gray sweatpants.
You've been busy.
So cute. It's adorable. But I'm just saying, like, at the end of the day, I really honestly think I spent more.
I hear you. Are you wearing anything tonight, Julie?
I'm going to teach a spin class in about 15 minutes, and I'm wearing a bunny mask.
A big spender on yourself. Let me give Kathy Grannis a chance to weigh in. Kathy, your thoughts.
First of all, I definitely have to give you credit. But I think that what Julie has just admitted to is a trend that a lot of parents are feeling at the same time. It's a really great time to go all out and make sure that their children have a wonderful night. You know, we do know that, of course, retailers are, you know, offering more than just costumes for parents to pick up or children to buy, you know, parents to buy. That they're also offering the accessories and highlighting their craft and fabric section, just like we're hearing with Julie. So congratulations, and I'm sure it's going to be a great night.
Yeah, indeed. Julie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. To you, Kathy, we're talking about Halloween, then we have Thanksgiving, we've got Christmas, we've got Hanukkah, we've got Kwanzaa, we have New Year's Eve, we've got, I guess, the sales that come after all of this stuff. Is this the sort of mega season then for retailers?
The Halloween season, believe it or not, is actually one of the smallest of the year for retailers because it's a non-gift-giving holiday. So your holidays like Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter rank much higher in terms of total consumer spending. However, Christmas, of course, is the cake taker at $616 billion.
Wow.
The holiday season actually represents about 20% of what the industry takes in on a given year. So it is make or break for some companies.
And I'm curious about what you're going to be wearing tonight, Kathy Grannis, or what you're going to be doing tonight.
Oh, tonight I'm actually going to a play, and to keep it very simple, I'm going to be a cat, but we'll be going to actually see a local theater production of Dracula, and I'm going to keep it simple so as to not distract my neighbors in the audience too much.
Is everyone going in costume, though? Is everyone going in costume or just you?
Well, the group that we're going with, I think that there's a couple. I heard of my one friends are going as two people from the older show, Twin Peaks. Uh-huh. So I'm really excited to see that one. Well, I'm not sure what the others will be.
Well, you'll find out. Kathy Grannis, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Great. Thank you again.
You're welcome. And she's a spokesperson for the National Retail Federation, telling us where that more than $7 billion spent on Halloween, where that money is going. Stay with us for the second portion of Radio Times today. We've got Mike Isaac. He's a tech reporter for the New York Times. We're going to be talking about Apple Pay and other mobile payment systems. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Apple Pay went live last week, a new mobile wallet that could transform what happens at the cash register. A number of big-name retailers, though, have rejected Apple Pay and are working on their own mobile payment system. We asked Mike Isaac, tech reporter for the New York Times, to tell us what's going on. And Mike, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Tell us how this Apple Pay, how that works.
So it's pretty simple. It's designed to actually be as simple as possible. Essentially, it works on only the new iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus phones that Apple just released in the fall. And essentially, you type in your credit card information, or if you have an iTunes account with Apple, your credit card's already in there. Add it to the phone, and then when you go to one of the stores that accepts Apple Pay, like Whole Foods or McDonald's, at the end of the transaction, there should be a little terminal in front of you, and it essentially just says that it accepts Apple Pay, and you stick your phone in front of it. It asks you to put your thumb on the fingerprint scanner that the iPhone has, and then that's it. Your sends a receipt inside the app or inside the phone. And it's really, really simple.
And what about security issues? There are always those questions when it comes to these kinds of payment systems.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, it's all a little more complicated considering it's not a traditional credit card swipe, although it does run on your credit card. But essentially, Apple uses this thing called tokenization, which was developed with Visa, MasterCard, a bunch of the credit card companies. And they essentially, like, sort of mask your credit card number on your phone and send an encoded number to the terminal. So Apple is never sending your credit card information and personal information to the merchant. It's just all sort of obfuscated and decoded through a bunch of encryption. And then you also have the fingerprint scanning, which is another sort of factor in this whole thing.
And again, talking with Mike Isaac on a cell phone, I'm not sure if your cell phone is going to make it through this segment, Mike. But
no, I'm sorry.
That's all right. We'll carry on until it just doesn't work anymore. Let me just give out the phone number to our listeners, which is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Just talking about Apple Pay and some of these mobile payment systems that are making an appearance. Now, interestingly, there's this merchant customer exchange, and they don't like this Apple Pay. They want their own system. What do they want?
Yeah, the merchant customer exchange, or MCX, is super interesting. They sort of formed 2 or 3 years ago, I believe, and it's basically this federation of retailers like Walmart, led by Walmart, and then with involvement with a bunch of other ones, Gap and CVS and Rite Aid. And what they're trying to do is produce their own app for smartphones called Currency. And it's not out on the market yet. It's supposed to come out next year. But essentially, the app, sort of supplants credit cards and can connect directly to your debit or bank account to pay for purchases at the counter. The problem is, it's not released yet, and it's also a little bit more complicated than Apple Pay or, you know, basically swiping with your credit card.
And what they want, according to what you have written, is that they want information about their customers at the cash register, which is why they want their own payment system.
Yeah, see, that's the sort of behind-the-scenes work here is that credit card companies have tons of information on the shopping that we do and the things that we're the time we're shopping for them and, you know, across different stores. Like, it's really sort of crazy how much info they have on us. And retailers would love to know all about our shopping habits, right? So if they can sort of bandy together and get this app off the ground, then they'll know a heck of a lot more about, you know, the types of things we want to buy and the times we want to buy them and perhaps, like, offer new deals to us through the app. Now, normally they try to do that with store-branded credit cards. Like, say you go to Target and get a Target card.
Right.
But that's not always easy to sign people up. So if they can get them on this app, that would be even better for them.
And if I'm a retailer, what do I have to do if I want to have, let's say, Apple Pay?
To have Apple Pay. So Apple Pay is actually pretty easy to sort of, there's a few different steps. Like, the first retailers that are working with Apple for the initial rollout is only a handful of, like, actual retail store partners. But if you want to work with them, you're probably obviously going to have to get in touch with them. And then you also have to do a bit of infrastructure changing on the back end, which means, like, you have to get a terminal that accepts NFC, which is near field communication, essentially like a touch-free way of sending payments through your phone. So that can cost a little bit of money to upgrade. But merchants are starting to do that more often over the next couple of years because, long story short, there's a law that a mandate that starts in 2015 that is saying that merchants have to upgrade their payment terminals to be more secure.
Oh, interesting. Because I was going to ask you, I mean, why would a retailer want to do that? But you're saying the law, in a sense, requires them to update their payment systems?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's sort of in the woods, but basically the merchants, if they do not upgrade their terminals, you know, those little things when you go to the, you know, the merchant, swipe your card or whatever, if they don't upgrade those to be more secure by October of 2015, they basically become liable for any credit card or payment fraud that occurs on their platform. So, you know, if I'm a thief, I use a counterfeit card at the Gap, and the Gap hasn't upgraded their systems by October of next year, and now the Gap is actually responsible for that instead of the credit card companies. So they all have to sort of do this switch, and that's perfect timing for Apple, who needs a bunch of retailers to upgrade their terminals anyway in order to accept Apple Pay. So it's all, like, very meticulously timed by Apple. It's very intelligent.
Well, I mean, that sort of sounds like the way Apple operates. But if we're talking about people with iPhones, and perhaps the latest iteration of the iPhone, does that then limit the number? I mean, that just sort of naturally limits the number of customers that can use this. But I'm assuming these are probably very prized customers.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So, you know, Apple Pay has definitely been getting a lot of attention, particularly because it's, you know, could upset the payments industry. But at the same time, you have to realize, you know, only iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus phones can do this transaction right now. And, you know, the iPhone 6 has been out for, what, like a month or so?
Right.
I think it was released in September. So, you know, they sell like crazy in the beginning, but that's still like a fraction of the number of people in the earth that spend money in businesses, right? So we still have to sort of be skeptical as to how far this sort of thing is going. And then also, it's a new behavior, you know? It's just hard for people to get out of the routine of swiping their card when they've been doing it for decades.
Is this, though, a step closer, the march towards a cashless country or cashless society?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, the thing that I've, throughout my reporting, the thing that I keep hearing over and over, and the thing that's really making competitors here nervous, is that if any one company can retrain how we use technology in our daily lives, it's Apple. You know, they created the tablet. They created the first mainstream consumer tablet where people love to use iPads all the time. They created the most popular touchscreen smartphone with the iPhone, and they, you know, they may revolutionize watches, you know, in next year when the Apple Watch comes out. So it's definitely probably a bigger step than we've had in the past 5 to 10 years than ever I've seen before.
Do you anticipate then Apple using their watch for Apple Pay as opposed to pulling out your cell phone?
Right, so that's exactly right. The watch is actually also has this NFC chip that I was talking about before inside of it. So, you know, ostensibly when the watch comes out, you could just wave your wrist over the payment terminal and then you're good to go, which is even easier, like you said, than pulling your phone out of your pocket.
Although no one has their phone in their pocket because everyone's on their phone, right?
Well, that's the smart thing that Apple's saying is, like, you know, you're waiting in line to buy something. What are you doing? You're looking down at your phone. You're checking Facebook. You're checking Twitter. You're checking whatever. So rather than doing the extra action of pulling your card out of your pocket or your purse, your phone's already in your hand, so you can just wave it in front of you.
So is this a battle between Apple Pay and currency, or is there room for a number of different, cashless payment systems?
So it's a really interesting – this is the problem. Retailers would love to accept Apple Pay if that's the way that people are going to start paying for things, right? Like, again, we don't know if Apple Pay is going to take off because it's so early. But, you know, if you're a retailer, you want people to have as many options as they can to buy stuff from your store. The problem for retailers that are working on currency who are part of MCX is that they signed exclusivity agreements, let's say, 2 or 3 years ago when they first signed up for this program. So that exclusivity agreement basically prohibits them from accepting Apple Pay as long as they are part of MCX, which is really puts them in a tight spot.
Well, I want to thank you, Mike Isaac, for joining us today on Radio Times. And if you could just ask someone to fix our phone system, I would really appreciate it. But thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Sorry, again, I apologize, but thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And that's Mike Isaac. He's a tech reporter for the New York Times. And we were talking about Apple Pay and a number of these new and, I guess, under construction mobile payment systems. Well, Amazon and Walmart are shopping behemoths, as we all know, and they have dominated the retail marketplace for years. Walmart recently announced that it was downsizing the number and size of its new stores, and it was expanding its business online, while Amazon has announced that it's going to have an actual physical presence in Manhattan, of all places. What does this mean? Joining us now is Shelley Banjo. She's a retail reporter for The Wall Street Journal. And Shelley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much.
So what does all this mean?
So we got some news this week that Walmart executives are weighing whether or not to match prices of Amazon and other online retailers in their stores. They still haven't made a decision yet because what it could do is really dent their profits. So we'll kind of hopefully get an answer to that in the next couple of weeks because holiday shopping is really just starting to get underway. The stores will reset to Christmas over the weekend right after Halloween ends.
Well, is it also a sign of these two just gigantic retailers responding to this, to a changing marketplace about what consumers want?
Definitely. I mean, Walmart has been trying to catch up with Amazon for quite some time. I think they kind of had their head in the sand for a little while, and over the past couple of years have really started to put a lot of money and time and effort into trying to catch up with Amazon. Amazon is still light years ahead of Walmart in terms of their .com, you know, 6-7 times bigger than their .com business.
And talking about Walmart, even though they are downsizing some of the stores that they're planning on opening next year, we're talking about something like 70 new superstores, 200 new neighborhood stores, 9 new Sam's Clubs. And this is a company downsizing their new stores?
Definitely. They're still building.
They're still building, clearly.
Yeah. They're definitely still building. And, you know, the thing is, though, they had said, oh, we're going to really build out all these smaller stores because, you know, Walmart's facing a lot of competition from Amazon and e-commerce retailers, but they're also facing a ton of competition from the dollar stores that have collectively opened something like 11,000 stores over the past couple of years.
Wow. And when Walmart says smaller store, what do they mean by that?
So their typical supercenter could be 100,000 square feet, and the dollar stores are much smaller. They're 10,000, 8,000 square feet. Walmart has been now trying to open smaller stores that are about 30,000, 35,000 square feet. So think, you know, your typical kind of grocery store.
Right. And something what closer are consumers sort of maybe because consumers want to buy more things online? Is that also changing what Walmart is doing and thinking?
Yeah, a lot of their smaller stores are mainly focused on things like groceries, things that people still don't buy as much of online. Now we're seeing that change as well, but right now people still mostly go to their stores, the brick-and-mortar stores for groceries. So you're seeing a focus on that. And also convenience. People don't want to drive 10 miles out to a supercenter when they can get all that general merchandise stuff online and then go to a closer place for their groceries.
You were reporting that Walmart is going to be opening a distribution center in Bethlehem in Pennsylvania.
That's one of the big distribution centers that they're opening up for their e-commerce. So they announced a couple more huge distribution centers that they're opening. This will be 5 in the past 2 years,
wow.
And they're putting a lot of money into it.
Do you know why Bethlehem?
You know, Amazon has a big presence also in Pennsylvania, and that's as much as I know, but they probably want to build off of other retailers' kind of talent pool and transportation kind of nexus.
Yeah, I was wondering about location, just the fact that it's sort of on the East Coast and sort of halfway between, you know, Boston or whatever. Do you think that plays a role?
I think so. I mean, you know, you have to be somewhere else. You know, you're not going to build a new distribution center necessarily in New York City. They don't really even have stores there. But it probably has to do with the location of, you know, being somewhere in the East Coast, exactly like what you said.
And is Walmart still as big a bricks and mortar retailer as it has been, or are they feeling the encroachment of things like dollar stores?
They're still the biggest retailer in the world. You know, there's more than 4,000 stores in the U.S. The nation's biggest employer. Whenever you think about Walmart, you have to think about things in numbers in a different magnitude than any other retailer. So they're definitely still the biggest, and see tons of people come into their stores every day. But with that said, their entire company is changing, and consumers are changing, customers are changing, and retail has a long history of people being number one and then kind of fading into the background.
You had a piece recently, actually in early October, the headline, Walmart to end health insurance for some part-time employees. Help us understand what that's about.
Sure. So Walmart, this is a big move for Walmart. They kicked off about 30,000 part-time employees from their health plans. And this is not new for the retail industry. Home Depot, Target had already done this, and that had to do with more options, more health care options available for these people through the Affordable Care Act and other state program and state subsidies. So Walmart certainly wasn't new for this, but since they are the biggest retailer and they are the biggest employer in the U.S., it kind of anything Walmart does, basically, other people will follow or kind of take a look at. And they made a big stand a few years ago when they said, yeah, we're definitely going to cover part-time workers. And, you know, they reversed that a few years later.
Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Shelley Banjo. She's a retail reporter for The Wall Street Journal. We've been talking about Amazon and Walmart, these retail behemoths. And we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be talking about Amazon after this short break. Stay with us. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow and talking with Shelley Banjo, a retail reporter at the Wall Street Journal, talking about what's happening in the retail market, talking about the big ones, Amazon and Walmart. We also will be talking about some other issues as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. So Shelley, the news is that Amazon is going to open something. I'm not sure if it's a store or not, but open have a physical presence in Manhattan. What are they doing?
So this is perhaps the biggest, most interesting development that's happened at Amazon in terms of their retail recently. So they said that they plan to open a store in the middle of New York City. It's going to be the first brick-and-mortar outlet in Amazon's 20-year history. It's going to be right on the same street as Macy's flagship store in New York City that, you know, everybody knows. And people are really curious about it. I know I am. But we're not sure what it's going to be. So we think it's going to be kind of a mini warehouse with limited inventory for same-day delivery, allow people to do, like, returns and exchanges and pick up online orders and maybe a little, kind of showroom. So you could see things like their Kindle e-readers and their Fire phones and their set-top boxes and things like that. It's more of a showroom, you know, about marketing Amazon.
Well, and so not a place where you could go and, you know, buy a hairbrush or something like that.
That's as far as we know right now. I mean, you never know what Amazon's going to do. So we'll have to check it out as soon as it opens, which is also something we're not exactly sure of.
But why? I mean, do you think they chose Manhattan because it's, you know, a big city with a lot of people and it's good for marketing?
I think so. I think this is all about visibility and branding and getting their name out there and, you know, connecting more with the customer during that important holiday time.
Does that tell us that they're worried about their online sales, or just that they want to be everywhere and they want to be in our lives wherever we are?
Exactly. I mean, I think you're starting to see, you know, both Amazon and Walmart, these two giants, kind of moving toward the same direction. You know, they're coming from two separate places, but they're both going the same way. So Walmart's opening more online, Amazon's opening more brick and mortar stores, and the answer is, you know, somewhere kind of in between there.
I also wonder whether there's this sort of same day or one day service, whether that has also been ratcheted up. The idea that I can't wait 2 days for my pair of shoes or whatever. I have to get it today or tomorrow. Is that also driving, you think, some retailers?
I think so, yeah. I think it's actually two sides of that coin also, because on the one hand, there are some things you want right away, and that is great for same-day delivery. And then there are other things that these retailers are finding people can wait for as long as they get it shipped for free, something like tennis balls or something like that, where you don't necessarily need it that day, but you'll order it, you'll get it in a couple of weeks.
You know, you mentioned tennis balls. I mean, I frankly worry about the small individual retailer, the tennis shop that sells tennis balls down the street, whether they're just going to be put out of business by these big stores.
I think probably some will. I mean, you've seen bookstores go away. You've seen record and, CD stores go away, music stores. There are definitely categories that will go away. But then you've seen some really great, mom-and-pop stores that have a relationship with their customers that people really want to come, like bike shops, for example. Bike shops do really well. They have a great relationship with their customers who come in there for advice and help and, have a real relationship with their customers.
Is that the key thing, having a if you're a small retailer, is that you need to make sure your customer service relationships are healthy and solid?
I think so. I think that's why people continue to go back. They know these people. Think about like hardware stores, your neighborhood cobbler, hardware store, bike shop. These are people you've known and you've developed relationships with that can help you with things, not just sell you things.
And that's Shelley Banjo, retail reporter at the Wall Street Journal, talking about the state of retail. If you want to join, and we'd like to have you join our conversation, actually, to find out about the kind of shopping that you do. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. Shelley, this whole thing about free shipping, that also seems to be undergoing some transformation. Help us understand what's happening there.
Yeah, we've been writing a lot about shipping, and partly because last year was such a mess. I don't know if you remember, but so many people didn't get presents on before Christmas because the shipping companies and the retailers just got totally overwhelmed by the growth of online shipping, and it's a big issue for people and for customers. And so with the free shipping thing, we took a look at how much is it costing now for free shipping, because it's certainly not free, and it's starting to get more expensive, meaning like the minimums that you have to buy on a website are going up.
Well, in fact, at Amazon Prime, they increased the minimum amount. Best Buy, everyone's doing this?
Pretty much. Everyone is doing it. It seems to be the trend, though you are seeing a couple of others buck the trend. GNC, for example, the vitamin retailer,
right,
went the other way. They decided, no more minimums. Everything costs an extra $3.99 for shipping, and that's the way we're going to be. And other retailers continue to play with it. So, like, Target is giving free shipping on everything just for the holidays, just for 2 months, where they know that it's going to be really competitive and they don't want shipping to be an issue.
And are there enough trucks in America to deliver all these goods on time?
That's going to be a really interesting, that's exactly what I'm, that's the number one thing I'm watching this holiday season, to see if everyone really is going to do it. And if customers and shoppers have realized that, maybe if I order it on Thursday, it might not necessarily get here for Christmas Eve.
Do you think some of these retailers, though, have some regrets about free shipping, only because you ran some numbers? It looks like it's at least on paper, a losing proposition, financially speaking.
I think it depends on the retailer, but for, like, it's easier for a luxury retailer like Tiffany, for example. You're already spending, $500. It's not that big of a deal. But for something like a Walmart or a Target, you really have to get over that threshold of, like, a $50 order before it really makes it worth it. And so that's why those minimums have come into play. But consumers don't seem to mind it. You talk to the more all the shoppers that I speak to say, I'll just bulk up on you know, toilet paper or something, you know, to reach that minimum, order more than I really need, which actually ends up being better for the retailer.
People want convenience, yes? I mean, is that the sort of driving issue for shoppers?
I think so, and especially online. You know, you don't want to necessarily pay more to get what you want, but you want to get what you want when you want it. So that's what retailers are trying to figure out, how to do that and not drive up their costs.
We were talking about Apple Pay and, you know, these new payment systems that are coming. Apple is already out there, and some other wallets, I guess, if I can call it that, are coming online. Do you see that changing how people shop and the retail experience?
I think payments is also a big hot topic this year. You've seen a ton of data breaches. People are worried. They don't know what to do. Should they pay in cash? What should they do? Apple Pay is something that is certainly might be a game changer. And I think we'll have to see kind of how it shakes out.
Well, and there was that hacking really sort of at the cash register last year.
Sure, the big hacking thing that started with Target but has since spread everywhere, Home Depot, Kmart, it's hard. We were just talking about how we couldn't necessarily even find a retailer that hadn't been hacked yet. Right.
Does that mean it's just the retailers just don't know how to stay ahead of the hackers, or this is going to be the world that we live in?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that retailers will admit that they were pretty far behind in the security sphere, that they needed to do more and that they continue to need to do more. And at the same time, you're seeing kind of everywhere get hacked. You know, saw J.P. Morgan with a big hack. And, you know, I think consumers are really starting to get really worried about their own information and kind of where that's going.
Let me get John from Mount Airy to join our conversation. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I like to talk about the 350 Project, which is a project determined to try to help brick-and-mortar independent stores. You and your caller and your guest mentioned that the online things and the work of the chain may be damaging brick-and-mortar stores. And the idea of this project is to commit people to spend $50 a month at a local store that they prize or that they feel good about. And the idea is to keep as many brick-and-mortar stores in place. One of the things brick-and-mortar stores do is they hire people generally from a neighborhood. And that helps with employment, that helps with neighborhood. The other thing they do is 64 cents of every dollar spent in a brick-and-mortar store, independent brick-and-mortar store, comes back to the community.
Well, John,
none comes back online.
I hear you. And you raised a couple of really good points there, John. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. And there are a number of efforts, Shelley, to make sure that, you know, local retailer stays in business for not just their own good, but also for the good of the community.
Yeah, and I think you're saying some local brick-and-mortar retailers do really amazing things. You know, you become involved in the community. You host things at your store. You host, like, you'll see a lot of running stores, for example, host, you know, weekly runs with people. You know, once you build that bond with them, they come back and they shop into your store. I think there's certainly a place for a local retailer that can build, they can be a part of the community and build relationships like that.
John, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. We'd like to know how you shop, how you make those shopping decisions. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We were talking with Kathy Grannis at the beginning of the hour from the National Retail Federation, basically saying that Halloween now is this, you know, kickoff celebration for this, 2 months worth of holiday shopping. Is there any way to know or to anticipate how retailers are going to do this year?
I think that it's going to be pretty competitive. I mean, every year gets more competitive, and it's going to, this year is certainly not going to be an exception, and you're already starting to see it. So you had Target say last week that they're going to give free shipping. Walmart starts on Saturday with 20,000 items that are on discount, and then on Monday with more sales on .com. And, you know, it's just Halloween. Halloween hasn't even come yet. I mean,
right.
You know. So I think it's going to continue to be competitive and promotional, and that's really good for the consumer because they're probably going to end up getting a better deal.
Competitive meaning competitive, the lowest price possible.
Exactly.
And, I mean, would it be fair to say that retailers have recovered from that really, you know, terrible implosion of the economy? Certainly some, you know, just went out of business and some are struggling. But broadly speaking, is retail back from what you can tell?
I think it's definitely a picture of the haves and have-nots. So there, since the general economy is growing very slowly, it's not like everybody and every retailer is benefiting. So there's a group of retailers that are really seeing their business grow, and there's a group of retailers that aren't. And it has to do, you know, there's not enough money for everybody to see their sales grow higher. So the ones that are doing well are getting the shoppers, and the ones that are not are struggling and kind of going spiraling even further down.
And it's the more, I mean, the people with the money, obviously, that are the spenders.
Yeah, you're seeing the higher end luxury do better. You're also seeing, you know, places like dollar stores continue to do well. What the struggle is in the middle, which is not unlike other parts of our economy, but you're seeing the struggles particularly at the department stores, the Sears, the Macy's, the JCPenney, you know, the Kohl's, those middle department stores that really had catered to the middle class for so many years.
Let me get Pete from Westchester to join us. Hi, Pete. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Just one comment. Everyone talks about the convenience, but one of the big reasons I shop online is that I can instantly compare all the different products, and they also get rated. So to me, that's a big deal whether I get it tomorrow or not. If I go to a brick and mortar, I'm looking at five different choices. There's no way to know if one's good and one's not. And often when I just get something on a whim, I go back and then look it up, and I bought one that people hate or something like that. So anyway, just another that's the reason I go online a lot.
Well, Peter,
just convenience.
For convenience sake, does that make sense, Shelley?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it's that kind of shopping behavior that retailers are starting to respond to now. So like Walmart just launched this new thing where with their app, you can go into their store and scan an item and then see all those online reviews on your phone. And so they're trying to kind of bring some of those online experiences into the stores. But I completely see your point. You know, if you can compare all the reviews at home on your desktop or on your, you know, tablet, why necessarily go into the store?
We have an email from Elizabeth who says, I won't shop at Amazon for anything if I can help it because of their brutal treatment of workers and even, she says, of writers as well. We did a show about what it's like to work at an Amazon warehouse. But there are people, Shelley, that just, you know, for what they would describe as moral reasons, don't want to shop at a place like Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a problem. Warehouses and warehouse workers are kind of that next area of worker rights and issues that certainly we're going to have to look at as more of these retailers build these distribution centers where, you know, these people's days are planned by the second and they have to, you know, they're on their feet all day working hard and moving heavy boxes.
Well, Shelley Banjo, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Shelley Banjo, retail reporter for The Wall Street Journal. We also talked with Mike Isaac, and he's a tech reporter for The New York Times. We were talking about Apple Pay and some of these new cashless payment systems that are under development. And we began our conversation talking with Kathy Grannis. She's a spokesperson for the National Retail Federation. And apparently by the end of today, we will have spent $7.4 billion on Halloween. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.